meeting, Saturday, 3rd November 1984. There are more than 4,000 million people in the world today. By far the greater number of them are occupied with dealing with their own problems. There is a very, very small minority interested in helping world problems. Both groups do not realize, with extremely few exceptions, of course, that individual problems are world problems, and world problems are individual problems. World problems are the collective result of the problems of each individual as such. And there are quite a few, I say few in relation to the figure 4,000 million, remember. There are quite a few who do devote their lives, as far as lies within their capacity and their perception, to help with world problems. But we must inquire whence, what is the origin of both individual problems and world problems? Practically all, again with very few exceptions, practically all the 4,000 million people are conscious of themselves as separate individuals. They are isolatively conscious. Their life revolves around their picture, which is the result of their own self-conception, their idea of what the word I means, which also implies, therefore, what the word you means, because every you is an other to each I. It is impossible to avoid this kind of self-consciousness, because from the moment we are born onwards, the functioning of our senses makes us perceive everything or person as something different from ourselves. Now, of course, in one sense, that is entirely true. Every person is an other person to oneself. If you were to tell anybody, you and another person are the same thing, he would question your sanity. Not unjustifiably, because he is functioning only in, he is conscious as a result of his sense functions, that's all. He doesn't realize that there is a relationship, a vital, factual relationship between any one thing or person and every other thing or person in the universe. This realization comes only at the culminating point of the evolution of one's own individual consciousness as such. And then one's separative, isolative consciousness undergoes a transformation into a holistic consciousness. And one is conscious in terms of totality, composed, of course, of multitudinous, unique, different things and persons, but nevertheless constituting a whole, the entire cosmos, the one total reality. Now, as and when that culminating point is reached, and there is this transmutation of the isolative, separative consciousness into the holistic consciousness, all problems as such, which one imagines are related to oneself, disappear. And curiously enough, all problems, which are world problems as we call them, also disappear. Because when there is a holistic consciousness which includes the totality, that inclusiveness involves an understanding of the totality and all that is happening throughout the cosmos, whatever it may be. It involves an understanding of it insofar as it enters one's own particular brain as such. So problems as such essentially mean that they are something which we have not understood properly. If we understand any situation or event or influence fully, clearly, then the aspect, the problematical relationship has vanished altogether. This is what is meant by seeing the fact as the fact. Supposing something happens which ordinarily we consider as painful, awful, terrible, evil. If we really understand it completely, in that total inclusiveness in our own consciousness, it ceases to be a problem. Because when we understand it like that, we know precisely how to respond to that particular difficulty or situation or awful event, as the case may be. Understanding leads to total acceptance. But acceptance has two aspects to it. When I say that total understanding involves total acceptance, it means that there is no reaction against that particular thing. It means that we do not hate it. And in the condition which is in the state in which there is the absence of hatred, there is also the absence of fear and anxiety and sorrow. And in the absence of those states, this understanding releases our capacity to relate ourselves rightly to the event or whatever it is. Of course, it is difficult. It is a Herculean task, this cleaning out of the Augean stables, because our psyche, as it is in our imperfect state, and our intellect, as it is in our imperfect state, is like an Augean stable, full of dirt, dust, clutter, muck, rubbish, and absurd, unwarrantable beliefs, conceptions, preconceptions, assumptions, and whatnot. All that is there. But when, as I say, we see quite clearly that seeing is also dissolving of the problem, which is the absence of right relationship. This does not mean that pain or pleasure as such is wiped off the map. Pain and pleasure are natural indicators of the nature of that with which we are in contact, the nature of the relationship, the event, and so forth. So pain and pleasure are bound to be there. Supposing I have realized holistic consciousness in the true sense, the full sense, the perfected Holy One's sense, you see. If a brick fell on my head, and if it fell from a sufficient height, well, I would die just like anybody else. If it was not at a sufficient height, and it fell from a foot or so above me, granting that the brick was rather a small brick, I would feel much pain, and the body would feel much pain, and that is all, you see. But if I have understanding, there would not be a wrong relationship between me, between this body and the brick, and the falling of the brick on my head. There would be a right relationship. I would not get upset psychologically. Inwardly, I would still be serene and at peace, taking it in my stride. Now, this I know personally through a stupid, unpleasant situation which occurs quite frequently when I sleep. I get cramp in my legs. Now, a couple of years ago when this sort of thing started, I used to feel quite annoyed and upset and almost use bad language. I don't use bad language because it is ugly. I like things which are beautiful, that is why, you see. And people, all of you, are beautiful to me. So I don't get annoyed like that. Now, through understanding that cramp occurs through certain conditions, through certain forces at play in the body. I say, all right, that is a painful situation. This was one of the Buddha's great teachings. That is a painful situation. It will pass away. It began, it will pass away. And so, lo and behold, it does pass away. Of course, it doesn't mean that I just keep lying in bed without doing anything about it. I get out of bed and walk around a little bit and move my foot like that and so forth, and lo and behold, in time, the pain has gone. But you see, what is so important is that there shall be inward peace, inward calm. Because in that state of inward serenity and understanding, one can accept everything in the right way. And that acceptance is a practical healing acceptance. There is, of course, the other kind of acceptance, the sort of person who says wearisomely, oh well, it can't be helped, that is my karma, I've got to put up with it, and so forth. You see, now that sort of acceptance is not of no use whatsoever. You just put up with it, and you wait for the term, for the time when the source of displeasure or pain or whatever it is has disappeared. I'll take the situation which occurs between thousands of husbands and wives in their lifetime throughout the world. One sort of waits with a sour spirit of resignation until the other one is dead. You see? And of course, when the other one is dead, there are of course lots of flowers uselessly wasted upon the funeral and whatnot, and all the absurdities of our everyday life take place. So, the right type of acceptance starts within the psyche through understanding. Now, understanding is not necessarily a sort of restricted to a scientific or medical understanding or some such thing like that. Such and such is the cause of it, and these are the forces at work, and therefore this is the result. Yes, it is quite useful to know all that. But often and often, even though one knows that, one doesn't really understand it. Because understanding has at least two elements: knowledge of the forces at play and a state of inward serenity which enables the spirit of love to operate. Understanding is a loving acceptance. It is not a mere intellectual acceptance. It is a loving acceptance. So now, with our problems in life, as we say, we have to deal with them with deep understanding. And one of the essential conditions necessary that one may understand is that one shall be quiet within oneself. One shall be at peace. I know people who come along and pour out a whole tornado of words explaining what is wrong with them and why it happened and this happened and that happened and what they suffer and all the rest of it. But of course they never get rid of it, therefore. They never get free of it, I should say, not rid. Because they are not quiet. One has to be quiet. When one can endure in meaning stay with it, carry on with it, be with it in quietly, then there is this element of of loving acceptance which comes into play. Now, as regards world problems, we all know that particularly since the Second World War, the whole world has slid into a state of moral and psychological and spiritual illness. And the illness is a severe one, really. There is no point in rushing along trying to solve these problems by joining societies or groups of people who are doing this and doing the other and so forth and so forth. One may do that if one thinks that that is the best way one can be effective. Then certainly do it, and do it happily. Do it with serenity inside oneself and with a loving acceptance at the same time. What is important is the understanding. If the understanding is there, then everything gets healed. We all know that the doctor's profession is to heal. But if we look at all the doctors in the world living today, supposing there are, well, for 4,000 million people, supposing there are 10 million doctors living, now of those 10 million doctors, how many of them themselves need healing? You see, your psychiatrist is supposed to help you to understand yourself and to put you into right relationship with society. But he seems to ignore the fact that society as it is so ill and in a state of confusion of mind and impurity of psyche, that it is responsible for your illness, for your psychological illness. And merely to circulate you once again in relation to that society is only adding to that society's mistaken ones. The task is an individual task. This is what we always seem to forget. We are individuals insofar as the psychophysical organism is a self-responsible organism. It has to do its own job. No one else can breathe on my behalf. No one else can feed or sleep or let the bloodstream run on my behalf. This body has to do it all itself. This brain has to do all its work itself. It cannot delegate its tasks to anybody else. But how many people are there? Now, you think of your own circle, your own friends and relatives and all the rest of it. How many of them have this awareness, this real awareness of self-responsibility? Very, very few. They're always running to somebody else for help. or leaning on somebody or depending on somebody and so forth. You see? So, as far as the solving of problems is concerned, this element also must play its part. To be wide awake to one's own self-responsibility. If one is whole and healthy within oneself, then one can certainly be a tower of strength to any group of people who are trying to do some good work and so on. Otherwise, things appear, it appears as if one is doing good because one has signed on the dotted line and become a member of society X or society Z or whatever it is. So, we come back to the fundamental thing, the living of the human life, the living of the religious life. And one can never repeat too often to oneself that the word human means the happy creator, creative activity. And remember that creative activity is free of all consequence to the actor. All consequence, good and pleasant or bad and unpleasant alike. In the holistic consciousness, none of our values hold. Supposing we assume that there is a God, a personal being who is the creator of the universe, of the whole cosmos, and so forth. How have we tried, human beings, tried to describe that God? Only in human, in subhuman, we subhumans have described that God only in subhuman terms. We say, oh, God is all love, all wisdom, all goodness. What do we mean by love, wisdom, goodness? It is our conception of love, wisdom, goodness which we transpose and plant upon God. Imperfection. I am a canny fellow, you see, a very canny fellow. God is the supremely canny fellow. Now, assuming that there is this personal God, creator of the whole cosmos, governor of the universe and all the rest of the claptrap which people talk about. Now, when we examine the universe, do we find the universal process all loving, all wise, all good? What about the great galactic explosions and so forth? Leaving aside the galactic explosions, consider earthquakes, floods, tempests, tornadoes, and what they do. We see they work havoc. We say that because we feel pain as a result of such things, and we don't like pain. We cannot accept pain. It is true that if pain comes to the living organism in too great a measure, the organism perishes. But if for instance, pain in too great a measure were to afflict me, and I perish, so what? I will die, that is all. And there is nothing to it. The cosmos went on thousands of millions of years before I was born, and will continue to do so after I am dead. So why worry about it? If it happens, so be it. Can I have that insight, that inclusive perception, which enables me to say to anything whatsoever, so be it, as and when it happens? But of course that does not mean that one must live in such a manner as always to let destructive things happen. Live in such a manner that things are beautified, that loving kindness, goodness, wisdom can flourish. Because one of the several purposes of our existence on this globe is that mind in its reality shall come to fruition in us. And mind is not merely the thinking principle. I think in the yoga teachings they talk of the mind as the thinking principle. It is not merely the thinking principle. If it is, then the word thinking in that context is something utterly different from thinking in our context. Mind is that aspect of the primordial creative energy which is responsible for the formative activity which we see throughout the cosmos. That is mind. At least that is what it is to me. We say, particularly, for instance, in the Trismegistic writings you find, the thought in the mind of God is the word, the creative word. The Jews call it the Ma'ama. It's a very wonderful word, a Hebrew word, Ma'ama. It's a murmuring, a vibrating. And, of course, the universal process is a very good instance of this vibrating which goes on. Whatever is alive is vibrating. Every single atom is vibrating. And so on. It's alive. You see, Ma'amar. The Zarathustrians had the Ahunavara, Ahunavairyo, the creative word. And in St. John's Gospel you have, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was with God. The Word was God. But what is God? Do I know what God is? I prefer to use the word transcendence, because the word God has been so spoilt through the millennia by man's absurd definitions of God. It is the unknown creative power, the creative energy, and so forth. Now, this God, does he get annoyed or upset at whatever happens in his cosmos? If he does, he will come to us to be healed. He doesn't get upset or not. He takes it in his stride. Oh, there, wonderful bubble burst when a galaxy suddenly explodes. He's enjoying himself. Can we enjoy ourselves with our pain and our problems and so forth? You know, there was an author, pity, I've forgotten his name, But he wrote a delightful little book. Quite humorous, very, very charming, and with profound understanding. There's a little girl in the story who was rather fond of plucking flowers from her uncle's garden, you see. And finally the uncle said to the little girl, "If you do that, I'll smack you hard," you see. So a little later the girl came laden with flowers, and the uncle smacked her, and she delighted in it, and she said, do it again, that's marvelous." I wish I could remember the name of the book. It was so funny, the whole thing. But you see, there is an extraordinary teaching involved in that sort of thing. But we can't accept it, because right from infancy we refuse to accept pain. Not the sour, resigned acceptance, but the loving acceptance which enjoys. It's a perverted enjoyment, if you like. But nevertheless, it is a peculiar sort of enjoyment of pain. Now, all of us who come to these meetings, and all people everywhere who go to similar meetings and are involved in societies which are concerned with human welfare and human benefit, what we have to realize is that the world problem is our own problem. We are the source of the world problem. It is because I hate that the world hates and performs hateful things. It is because I, in my thought and feeling, commit a murder, get rid of something which I dislike, someone I dislike, that the world commits murders. We all contribute to it. There is this tremendous psychical atmosphere, just as there is a physical atmosphere, the air. And this psychical atmosphere is something for which each and every one of us is responsible. The unfortunate thing is that neither parents nor teachers nor priests all over the world are sufficiently aware of this fact, so that they can teach the younger ones about it. We have to take account about it, account of it, because it is in our own selves. Our own problems are due to the psychical atmosphere being polluted. And it's that pollution which affects not only ourselves, but it affects our environment. Consider what happens when pollution of the air takes place, with factories belching forth smoke which contains the oxides of nitrogen and sulfur and so on, which are poisonous gases, you see. Now, not only the people who produce work that factory and are responsible for all that smoke, who suffer from it. Look at the present row over the asbestos business, you see, and so forth. Not only they, but we who breathe that air, we can't say, "Oh, I won't breathe this air because the Battersea power station is belching forth smoke and poisoning the atmosphere." I breathe it also, and I am not responsible for it. We are involved with each other completely. And people won't accept that. They say, "Oh, it doesn't concern me. I didn't do it. I wasn't responsible for it." And so on. But we must wake up to this fact that we are completely interrelated and interacting with each other. So we are our brother's keepers, whether we accept it or deny it. You can't. That is the fact of the matter. Nature has made us like that. And seeing these things, we can so work that we bring about a new state of affairs. Something beautiful, something healthy, something whole, and therefore holy. And in that holy state, our humanity will really flower out. And the terrible inhumanity that we witness nowadays, all over the world, will be dissolved away. It will be purified, it will be transmuted into something which is most worthwhile.